unpack your knives and stay. Yes, stay. It's the Top Chef Judges Roundtable Podcast here on Reality TV Rehapbox. My name is Mike Bloom, breaking down episode 4 of Top Chef, joined by two lovely individuals, the brain, the head, and the guts, if you will, of the Judges Roundtable. Haley Strong, which one are you?
Oh, gosh. I would have said I'm the internal organs.
So I guess that's the guts by default. Kurt, that makes you the head. How do you feel?
I'm just gonna leave that one right there, Mike.
Perfect. Leave it. Don't overcomplicate things. We'll just leave it right there and let the judges enjoy the simplicity, much like Brother Luck's emotionally hefty meal. So here we are, episode 4 of Top Chef Colorado. Two very interesting challenges. I would almost call them two quintessential Top Chef challenges. We had a quick fire challenge where it was essentially one of those cook, but we're going to put this sort of burden or this sort of rule in there to limit the things that you can cook. And then the elimination challenge, I like to call it the getting to know you challenge, where you get to draw upon your past or your experiences to make a meal to present yourself to the judges. Now, as a result, the Bear Den has lost a member. I don't know if it's lost, if it's completely, dissolved. I don't know if Tyler was really the keystone, but still we lost a big voice in the Top Chef season and also a pretty big presence as well, considering that he won the very first elimination challenge. Haley, what were your overall thoughts about this episode?
It was actually kind of spoiled for me because I was trying to find a way to watch the episode. For some reason, it wasn't up on the Canadian website yet. So I went on the Bravo website and their first like homepage thing was like, check out Last Chance Kitchen with Tyler. So I was like, well, shoot. And then I saw that there was two episodes of Last Chance Kitchen. So I was like, oh, I wonder if like another person's getting eliminated or, so it wasn't completely spoiled. But watching the episode, knowing that Tyler gets eliminated, I feel like it wasn't super obvious throughout the episode that he was going to be the one going home, like we've seen in the last three episodes. So that was a highlight, I guess.
The highlight was being surprised that he went home.
Yeah,
or knowing that you would have been surprised had you not been spoiled.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's valid, though, and I know that's something that has been talked about a little bit in the discussions we have every week in the patron group of Rob Has a Podcast, which if you're not a patron yet, that's one of the many, many incentives for you to hop on there. But there is some merit to the argument sometimes, especially when there are a lot of chefs left in the competition. We're seeing a lot of this person this episode. That means they either do really well or really poorly. And I agree with Haley. For a very, very long time in this episode, I thought that it was Bruce's farewell. Yeah. Until we got the line from Padma at the very end about how Tyler failed on, I think, both concept and execution, that made me sort of swing at the last second to Tyler going home. But Kurt, overall, what did you think about this episode? Tyler's boot included.
I was actually surprised by Tyler's boot. I also thought Bruce was going home. I had talked a little bit about last week about how you sometimes get the chef backstory and then you sometimes get the personal backstory. And the chef backstory, you're usually pretty safe. But when you get the personal backstory like Laura did at the end of the last episode or week three, then she ended up going home in the quick fire. And so when we started out almost, very similar, like with Bruce's personal backstory at the very front end about the adoption issues that they had faced and how, the person they're adopting from maybe giving birth this week. I thought, oh, this does not bode well for Bruce, kind of testing that hypothesis. And then throughout, he was just not doing well. Like when we got to the tasting, he didn't, do so well. And then when we got to the bottom three and I saw that, I had two people go home from my draft last week. And now two of the three people in the bottom three were up for elimination. I thought for sure he was going to be gone. And so I was very surprised that it was Tyler. But then again, this was a story. I mean, that was at the front half before I realized that, I don't watch the previews for the upcoming episodes. So I didn't necessarily realize going into it that this the back half of this challenge was going to be the personal stories challenge. And so it makes a little bit more sense. It's kind of a one-off to have backstories about somebody early on in the episode. And it may not necessarily be indicative of an edit that they're going home.
Well, let's talk about those backstories. As you mentioned, we start off here with Bruce talking a bit about his marriage and, as you mentioned, the soon-to-be birth of his adopted child. He's had a long history with trying to have a child between him and his wife. And even when he went through adoption, apparently the adoption agency went under and he just lost $18,000, which sounds disastrous and horrifying. Haley, what did you think about this like introduction to Bruce a little bit, especially how it tied into the quick fire itself?
This episode just like had me in tears the entire time. You know, between Bruce's backstory and sometimes or somehow kids talking about food always gets me like emotional for whatever reason. I can't watch like
what if they don't like the food? It still gets you really emotional.
It's just like watching
which
like
emotion
like watching Master Chef Junior or like Chop Junior when they're just like all very like very talented children. Maybe it's like a mix of like, oh my god, it's so great that they're great, and like a bit of like, I'm 26 and terrible at everything and these children are amazing.
Well, keep in mind, like, these weren't necessarily kids that could cook. These were kids that could eat good food.
No, but they were talking about kids who could cook. And, like, that little clip of Top Chef Junior, I was, like, ready. I was getting misty. That's for damn sure.
And, like, when 26 and I'm not good at anything is, like, a fantastic tagline for something. I don't think it's true
my
for
life.
You, Haley,
it's
but
the
I feel
tagline
like
for my life, Michael.
Well, and if you say you're good at one thing, it's apparently getting emotional when kids just like to talk about the idea of food.
Yeah,
and we're gonna get that in droves here as we move into.
Well, great, you're gonna get my tears in droves throughout this entire episode. Like it was, fantastic. This was like the. You know what, Haley? Why don't you just sob today?
Oh my goodness!
Because then we get. I'm getting ahead of myself, but whatever. Let me live my life. Then we get Brother's emotional story where I was crying, and then we get. Where we visit the women at the what's it called?
The incubator.
Yeah.
The food incubator.
Yeah. The food incubator, where all these like wonderful women who are like immigrants and also like in a lot of cases refugees were like, yeah, this is our dream. Like we're trying to make better life. Sobbing. When we get to the actual dining where everyone's telling their stories, sob. Like it was just like I was crying this entire episode.
All right, well, let's do this throughout the course of discussing this episode. Can we get, like, a strong sob counter where when we discuss a moment in the episode, you point out when you cried and we'll sort of get a counter going to see how many times you actually did end up getting overwhelmed over the course of this episode?
Sure.
Okay, so Bruce was one. Are we counting that? Okay, perfect. So we're already one down. I don't know if we'd be crying tears, maybe tears of joy upon seeing Chef Curtis Stone as I thought was going to be the guest judge only for this quick fire challenge. Kurt, you're a frequenter of many cooking shows. Do you have any opinions about Curtis Stone?
He spells his name wrong. He spells it with just one S. I mean, Curtis with two S's. So he's immediately on the wrong side of history there. No, I think he's tall. He's Australian. Like, you know, who isn't going to like Curtis Stone? He's been on so many cooking shows over the years that like they have a lot of guest judges that will come in. Oftentimes people who are kind of local to the area that I won't necessarily recognize. But, you know, Curtis Stone, you know, you're going to recognize him. And obviously they brought him in as the host of Top Chef Junior. And so I was interested in where this challenge was going to go. And you gotta love a good knife draw where you're just getting a random dish that you have to gussy up.
Considering Curtis's tenure on the Celebrity Apprentice, I'm just hoping that the bathroom on set was kept in pretty good condition.
You never know. We can only hope.
Haley, do you have any opinions about Curtis Stone?
Surprisingly, I don't have many. I do like him, but I'm not like the biggest Curtis Stone fangirl.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe the AV Club reviewer said he's like a human version of a paper plate, which I don't know if I would necessarily say that, but I enjoy him nevertheless. I've been watching a lot of Top Chef. Go ahead.
Is he a first round draft pick for me? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, I guess maybe that's why you're so drawn to him, even though you despise his first name there, or maybe you despise his mother or father for giving him that first name. I guess he's totally in your wheelhouse there, Kurt.
I guess so.
And also Curtis Stone, not just a host of Top Chef Junior, I believe he was a host for the last few seasons of Top Chef Masters as well. So he's dealt with the adults and he's dealt with little chitlins, which we talk about here. Direct tie-in into Top Chef Junior. And they're going to be doing a challenge actually right from Top Chef Junior. I've been watching the show alongside with this one. So I remember the challenge as well. When Emeril came in, they basically had to just take a kid's meal and elevate it, whether that means making it more healthy or just making it a bit more elegant. You're supposed to do a take on it, or in one case, just completely do a different thing that somewhat resembles the knife that you drew. But the big kicker with this challenge as well, there's a couple of them. The first is that the judges will not only be Curtis and Padma, who, by the way, was wearing like a lovely, like, black striped two-piece going on, but also three children of some of the best chefs and restaurateurs in Denver. We have Lydia, who is the daughter of Lachlan Patterson, the guy from last week who still may or may not have competed on Last Comic Standing. We have Niall, I think her name was, who is the daughter of Peter Kaczynski, and Jack, who is the son of Chef Alex Seidel. Haley, what did you think of this panel of kids as judges?
They were savage AF, and I was here for it.
Do you guys think that there were several scenes of, like, any time that one of the kids commented negatively about one of the dishes, there was, like,
the chef's laughing.
I got a feeling that was just all B-roll, though. I mean, that got to be a bit much for me in terms of.
I'd be laughing too if, like, I mean, brother says it. You know, they're getting clowned by little kids, and I think like they just got a delight out of like these kids who were like 8, 10, and 12 walking around and being like, "I didn't like the texture of your dish." It felt like they were all sort of Simon Cowells in that regard, though. I feel like Niall was probably, maybe in her maturity, she tried to be the most constructively critical, whereas the other two might have were just very blunt in their feedback, which made for entertaining television, in my opinion.
I would not order this in a restaurant. Ugh, I loved it.
Well, the other big thing that happens in this challenge is that in lieu of the children-inspired challenge and the children inspired judges, I suppose, they're going to be children inspired cookware. They're going to be cooking with miniature equipment. I'm still not sure if this is from like Fisher Price or Easy Bake Ovens play sets, or if this is just they happen to find miniature versions of all of this cookware, but they can only cook using this. Kurt, again, as a connoisseur of a lot of cooking shows, I've seen this talked about around the internet after this episode aired. This feels very in the realm of Chopped, does it not?
I haven't really watched much Chopped. I know that there was
Cutthroat Kitchen, I should say.
Yeah. I know that I was in a brief discussion on Twitter with Gwen Bakes the Cake and Alex Wilpon about that. This did feel very Cutthroat Kitchen to me in terms of, and those who haven't watched Cutthroat Kitchen, it's basically you do have to make a dish, but there's some, you kind of auction off penalties and obstructions to the other chefs. And so, like, you might have to pay $100 out of your $400 bank to give one of the chefs they can only cook with kid-sized items. Another person has to, you know, wear a cast while they cook. So this did very much feel like that. Although I think I saw in a close-up of the equipment, like, they had like small, like, you know, half-inch wide, non-sharp plastic knives, but we did see them actually using knives during it. So it seemed like it was largely, we heard a lot about the cutting boards, and we saw some small saucepans and frying pans and kind of actually like cookware. So I'm wondering exactly like what the specific rules were. That didn't necessarily seem to limit people a whole lot. I think we spent most of the episode, or most of this challenge, talking about like what the idea was behind the elevation, and people seemed to get past that little barrier of the Fisher Price quickfire pretty quickly.
Yeah, I'm surprised it was not sponsored by Fisher Price. Haley, what did you think about this idea in the challenge?
As a person who does love Cutthroat Kitchen, I was super into it. I thought it was hilarious watching all these like huge guys like have to deal with these tiny little pans. Oh, it just kills me. It just kills me. I'm here for the comedy of it, okay? I thought it was a cool challenge, and I think I thought it was a lot of fun.
These are not my favorite challenges. I think I've talked about that in seasons past. But if you have to bring out these challenges, I'm happier it's in the beginning of the season. You know, again, if they pulled out this challenge at like the final four this season, I would not be terribly happy about it. But since there are so many chefs left in the competition, and as a result, I feel like they produced, you know, varying levels of food. But like you said, Kurt, I don't think that the inhibitors or the criticism drawn from the dishes were really because of the equipment they were using. It was mainly because of the concepts they were coming with. And speaking towards those concepts, looking at all of the dishes that we got from our remaining 11 here, Haley, any specific highlights or lowlights for you in true, you know, kid style as to the dishes that these chefs ended up producing?
Sure. And I just have one more point about this challenge. I like that it was a fun, silly challenge paired with something that tends to be a bit heavy. We've seen it a couple times.
Yeah.
So it's a nice balance. So I'm not crying throughout the entire episode, just like 75% of it.
That's perfect. That's a good, I think you want to like take a break as well. I think a quarter of the episode, you know, that's 15 minutes to sort of dry your eyes and get rehydrated before it all comes gushing out again. So I think that's absolutely understandable. And I totally agree. It's like the comedy mask and the drama mask pairing against each other. I think made for a really nice, like, ebb and flow throughout the course of the episode. But looking on all these dishes, what stood out for you, either positively or negative?
The chicken quesadilla from Two, and whoever had the taco. Someone had a taco and it sounded delicious.
Chris.
That was Chris.
Yeah, Chris had a taco. So those two were my top two. Fatima's Caesar salad also sounded delicious. Like, a lot of them seemed great. I didn't think Tyler's pho with shrimp meatballs and zucchini noodles was going to go over super well, because I agree with the kids that it was a little too far off the original dish. And the corn dog, it just didn't seem like it was for me. Thank you.
This is also going to be a big meatball episode too, because Tyler makes the shrimp meatballs. He's going to make the Swedish meatballs. I think that Adrian might be making, someone else might be making meatballs in the elimination challenge. So, I mean, if Josh from Big Brother 19 was ever watching Top Chef, he would have promptly turned off the TV at this point during this episode.
Ugh, that's okay. I was drawn to, like, here's like 2017 for me has been the year of the Caesar salad. It's like, I, for some reason this year, whenever I go to a restaurant, I've been drawn to just try the Caesar. So even though it was really, you know, Fatima had pulled the grilled cheese knife, which is something else that I love, I would have really been intrigued, I think, to try her dish out of all of the dishes. That having been said, it's hard for me to turn down a good corn dog. So Carrie's, corn dog, I might have had to try that. I was a little surprised when Bruce presented his fish sticks that the kids were like, oh yeah, we know Bruce, we go way back.
This is ridiculous. He probably knew them since they were in utero. Like, oh yeah, I remember Bruce, I remember when he pointed at me on the ultrasound. Like, this is getting absolutely ridiculous now.
Everybody knows Bruce.
Oh my goodness. I love with Chris specifically, going back to the tacos a little bit, that Niall was like, this is one of the best deconstructed tacos she's ever had. I've never had a deconstructed taco in my life, and I am probably like twice her age.
Like, all of my tacos deconstruct. Like, don't you ever have to eat all the stuff off the bottom after eating your tacos? Doesn't that count as a deconstructed taco?
You've had nachos, Mike. Those are deconstructed tacos.
With what? With like a chip shell instead?
No, it's just the nachos are the shell. You got all the ingredients piled on top, and nachos are basically just a deconstructed taco.
Well, I want to go back to Kurt's Caesar salad thing. Is there a perfect Caesar salad now that you've sort of like hopped from restaurant to restaurant? Like, what would make up the ingredients of your ideal Caesar salad?
I like the Caesar salads that do incorporate actual anchovies. That's something that I've actually gotten to it. I think a nice level of saltiness is something that I really like. So it's not so much that there's anything there or missing. The ingredients are pretty standard, but I think for me it's the seasoning that's used. It has to taste more than just simply like, if you're primarily getting like 90% lettuce in what you're kind of in every bite, that's what's wrong. I think you have to have a good crispy crouton. Here I would have been really intrigued to see how the grilled cheese crouton, the crispy grilled cheese croutons, mm-hmm. would have gone over. Tomatoes and
which is the second episode in a row that grilled cheese croutons were used. Tyler used it last time. Oh, Fatima used it this time. Hopefully that's not a curse and Fatima goes home next time, because that would
how
just
dare
be
you even
cursed item on top
even
chef.
Talk about something like that.
Yeah,
I know. I don't want to put that out into the universe. I have a couple more highlights as well. I mean, you can always get me with a burger if it's cooked well. So Brothers Buffalo Burger with avocado on a pretzel bun with jicama fries just looked right up my alley. I was a little intrigued by Chicago Joe using the gochujang in his, I guess his take on chicken fingers, because I don't know. I feel like when you're cooking for kids, well, as Tyler says, you don't want to necessarily look down on them. I feel like they can only handle a certain level of spice. And gochujang, anytime I've had it, has like had steam pouring out of my ears like I'm some sort of 1930s cartoon character. So I'm a bit surprised that it wasn't too overpowering. But I want to give credit as well to someone who was in the top in this challenge but didn't ultimately win, Tanya's mac and cheese. Again, that's something that's always going to hit me, but it looked really, really good. In particular, and it, I like how she sort of took different elements of mac and cheese and really, you know, put a little bit of a more delicate element into them while simultaneously throwing some bacon on there for good measure. But our winner of this challenge is Adrian, who had a cauliflower crust pizza with ricotta spread, tomato compote, and fried quail egg. She even got the kids to try a cauliflower crust pizza. Haley, Adrian is on your draft team, and she has been she's been like our bottom G dot Otis for the past few weeks. This is her first time really finishing in the top of anything. Were you excited to see her win here?
I was super excited to see her win. I thought it was awesome. I'm not a big fan of cauliflower crust pizza, so this is probably not something I would personally go for. But Adrian, get it, girl.
Well, I thought it was interesting that she's making it, and she talks about how, like, the key thing is you don't let them know that it's a cauliflower crust. And then you tell them afterwards, and like, oh, it's great. But here, like, I'm surprised to hear, like, right out of the gate, she mentions it's a cauliflower crust pizza. Although, I'm guessing, you know, for judging purposes, you have to explain fully what the dish is. Because they did, when they explained the cauliflower crust, they did kind of cut to little... It wasn't disgust on the kids' faces, but like, are
surprise,
you kidding me? Surprise and like hesitancy. So I'm wondering, Haley, if do you think you would know it was a cauliflower crust pizza if you tried it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it just has a completely different appearance, right? Like, you could tell me it's like it's hard to tell me like, oh, this is just a casual regular crust. I'm like, girl, I know it's cauliflower. I can see it.
I like Kurt's point of trying to be coy. I don't think we've ever seen anyone be like, all right, what did you make here? Well, you know, this is a typical panini with, you know, some chicken underneath. What's your bread made out of? I'll never tell. You're going to have to find that out for yourself. It's a secret. Like, you have to imagine that she had to give some full disclosure there, even though as you mentioned, the gig was sort of up as soon as she said the words cauliflower crust. But it seemed to, you know, win over the kids to this point. And as we mentioned before, they could be very tough critics in some regard. So and another interesting consequence of this, besides Adrian winning and getting immunity, is that, you know, my interview with Tyler isn't out yet for Parade, but he talks about in my interview with him about how his finish in the bottom here almost led directly to his elimination in some sort of way, shape, or form, because he was so surprised at being in the bottom that it made him completely overthink this elimination challenge, which was really the major note of his dish that really sent it into a downward spiral. And speaking of the elimination challenge, we mentioned it before, create a dish that represents your heritage. I would be intrigued to hear from you guys if you had to create some sort of dish, or at least bring in some components that represent your heritage, whether that means a family dish or, you know, your cultural backgrounds. Do you have any idea of what it would be, Kurt?
Yeah, actually. So my dad's side's pretty boring. It's kind of like a Western European mutt, a little bit all over the place. There's actually like a little bit of Native American in there but still I wouldn't know what to do there. But my mom's side is much more clear cut. I'm 50% Polish and 50% Syrian. So actually the Syrian refugee thing was actually really interesting to me. I know that they are making kibbe there, and I've had that before as well. But I would probably do some sort of, my grandmother had this recipe for just what we simply called Syrian bread. It was kind of a non-risen dough bread. There's this kind of chicken dish called matlubi that we also made that I would have, you know, wanted to learn the recipe for. I was actually just talking to my mom about it over the holidays. But then also, like, you know, kielbasa was like a very big, and so like some sort of kielbasa chicken, maybe like a kielbasa chicken dish. I don't know if I would be, you know, wrapping it in this Syrian bread, or making some sort of like Eastern European, Middle Eastern European gumbo out of the kielbasa and chicken from the chicken dish, but something kind of along those lines, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Haley?
I'm like Kurt said, I'm a European mutt. I have French, English, Irish, Scottish, German, but I don't have a lot of strong ties to that. Like my grandmother's parents were immigrants. I don't know about my father's lineage as much. So I don't really have any strong ties to anything like that. But I think I could easily do like a Canadian dish, you know, whatever, something doused in maple syrup. That would be easy.
I was trying not to go there. I wanted to get all of these stereotypes out in the first episode. So I wasn't going to bring
it. No, you know what? I'm just diving into Canadian stereotypes. Or like a really wonderful poutine. I think that could go over well.
Maple syrup poutine served on a hockey stick. I think that perfectly encapsulates all of Canada, right?
Yeah, or something like that my mother makes, like, you know, like a really good meatloaf, I think, is something that could also go over well with these dishes. Because for a lot of them, what I've been saying over and over and over again, it's the simple dishes that are elevated that seem to be doing well rather than like the overly chefy dishes. So I think, you know, a meatloaf or like a poutine or something, I think that's probably the angle I would go for.
Yeah, you bring up a really interesting point, because it does seem like we almost went in two different directions with this challenge. You had people like Brother and Two and even Chris and Tanya say, okay, you know, I'm going to cook something that is really hearty and not necessarily, you know, makes you full, but something that really speaks emotionally. This is something my family used to make, or this is something that, you know, that resonates with where I came from. And it was more of a simple dish, whereas some people like Tyler and Joe, Sash and Adrian more so went with, okay, I'm this and I'm this. Let's throw them together and see what happens. But to go back to your point, Haley, I do wonder why there is sort of this idea of overthinking, overcomplicating things. I honestly wonder if it's sort of like the stigma with Top Chef. You know, I think Top Chef really prides itself on being the cooking show to end all cooking shows. And so they feel like, okay, I'm competing on this show. I'm not just going to make chicken and dirty rice. I'm not just going to make this soup, you know, and as a result, they really get in their own head thinking that they need to complicate things. But as a result, it gets all muddled in the judges' mouths. Kurt, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think there's like one of my kind of something that I think is fun to explore is like, what's the difference between complex and complicated? I mean, usually if you hear the term complicated, it's, you know, preceded by something along the lines of unnecessarily complicated. But you can have a complex set of flavors that just like the human body is complex, but it's, you know, necessarily so. And so I think that you could have a complex.
I don't know. Don't
dish.
I have some organs that I don't need?
Well, you know, the appendix is like the one exception. But I think you can have a complex dish without it being complicated. And it's a strange thing about being complex yet simple. And so I think it's when you start kind of throwing in Katsuji style, all these extra ingredients that you don't really necessarily need, or not necessarily thinking things through before jumping in, that things kind of potentially go off the rails. I felt kind of bad for Tyler also, in terms of like, here's someone who he doesn't know. It seems like we talked previously about, you know, what kind of prep work can you do to get onto before you get on Top Chef. And I know on Twitter, Brooke has said there's not really much that you can do. You either have it or you don't. And I know, you know, our perennial favorite Jim Stevens has said, well, you know, when he got to, you know, Charleston last season, he actually scoped out the Whole Foods ahead of time. But here I say, I think you would want to, because it always seems to at least come up in some way, is something about your heritage or where you came from, not just in terms of how you became a chef, but also just in terms of your background. And it seems like that might have been some homework that Tyler could have done, and maybe not digging into, like, you know, ancestry.com to find out, you know, what part of Sweden did my, you know, dad's mom hail from, but looking a little bit, okay, I know that I'm Swedish, and then let me just like do a little bit of rudimentary work into understanding some of the basics of that kind of cuisine. Just like I was talking about, like, I would want to go back and learn more about my Syrian heritage and my Polish heritage, and some of the dishes there, when they might not be part of my day to day right now.
But
yeah, that would be a fun pre-challenge. You know, they show Bruce talking about his daughter, and then we have Tyler getting his like 23andMe results back with the test tube saying like, hey, you're 15% German. Great. All right, now I know. Time to cook some kielbasa.
But like, I feel like Carrie was in a very similar position to Tyler, yes, where she yes. said, I don't really know my heritage, but I know I'm from Idaho, so I'm going to make something with Idaho potatoes. And I think that was a really clever way about like to do this. Tyler just completely overthought it. He could have done a lot of things. He could have just done, I'm doing Southern California thing. I'm making this avocado dish, you know, something like that. He didn't have to be like, yeah. oh, you know, I heard one time that someone in my family has been to Sweden, so let's go to IKEA.
Yeah, I mean, and to Mike's point, it's, like, it's not like they're holding your dish up next to a set of 23andMe results. I mean, they're not going to be like, well, we actually know that you're, you know, this percentage yeah. Swedish, and so your dish should make up that percentage. It's like, if Tyler's, I want to say heritage, but, you know, if kind of who he is has been much more shaped by his life and, you know, three generations of life, let's say, just making that up in Southern California, then steer into that. Don't try to necessarily force something in that isn't really a part of who you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't force something in when it's not necessarily a part of who you are. Sage advice from Kirk Clark.
Make sure
there.
You ask first.
No, I agree. And I don't want to like backseat chef a little bit, but I feel like if Tyler wants to go for a little bit of a mashup here, I feel like, you know, what Joe Stash did with the French and Italian, or even what Adrian did with like Irish and soul food, I feel like that makes more sense than I feel like Southern California and Sweden are on literal opposite sides of both the map and the spectrum, that I feel like there's nowhere where you can really combine those two in a way that seems smoothed over. They talk about when they're looking at
Swedish meatball taco.
Deconstructed Swedish meatball taco.
You can make anything into a taco and it's fine.
But I would say that, you know, maybe he could even do something like, you know, I came from Southern California. Now I'm residing on this farm in rural Connecticut. Let me do like a farm to table version of a fish taco, as you mentioned, or another like Southern California dish. Like, I feel like that could be a good way of sort of representing your journey. Again, I don't want to put myself too much in the
California burrito. Let's put some French fries in something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but I think even Tyler would admit that he way overthought this. But we're going to get into a lot of these chef stories. I want to talk a little bit, though, about where they end up going at first. They go on another field trip, as they did a couple of episodes ago. As we mentioned before, they're going to Kamal, which is a food incubator that helps immigrant and refugee women get culinary careers. And I don't want to get, you know, too political here, too current issue on the Roundtable podcast, but I mean, I think it's a really, really genuinely beautiful statement to in a time where I think people are looking onto the plights of immigrants and refugees with some, you know, stern brows, to have these stories saying, you know, here are people saying, I love to cook. I'm so happy that I was brought into this country and I'm receiving assistance to be able to do what I love to do. And this is why I came here for safety. I think they were genuinely moving stories right there. And especially when you have people like Fatima, for instance, who like came from Pakistan, or even Rogelio last episode. Yeah. I think it ties in greatly with this overall narrative that Tube's going to mention, you know, food is history. Food is a story. Food is culture. I think that the Slavica, the owner of Kamal, says, you know, food transcends all cultures. And I genuinely feel like this was a fantastic way to represent that. Granted, it came about 5 minutes after they were all running around with little rinky dink egg beaters trying to make, you know, pizza and tacos. But I was genuinely moved by this part.
Yeah, I would have liked Rogelio to be here for this challenge just to kind of see what he threw together. But at least we still had, like, you know, you mentioned Fatima, but even two.
And Claudette, too.
And Claudette. And but, you know, two mentions how his parents were refugees from Vietnam. And so you definitely see that there's kind of little pockets of these chef testants where this challenge potentially meant a little bit more to them. And I wonder if that was like a little bit more fuel under the fire.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was also worried as well, because I'm always worried now that people are going to pull a Kwame, which is the term that I'll give to, like, if your story emotionally overwhelms you so much that it negatively affects your cooking. And that it might have happened with a couple of people, as we'll talk about when we break down the dishes. But luckily enough, while there were some really emotionally overwhelming stories from these chefs. Nobody had a situation like Kwame, where it was, you know, my dad and I had this, or my, we had this really troubled past, and now it's really, I'm sort of getting my anger out and my unhappiness out in my cooking. The dishes, for the most part, all seem really positively influenced, which, yes, I think led to some much greater acclaim overall.
Yeah, this didn't open up like some, you know, deeply repressed horrific memories for anybody, which was good to see.
Well, Haley, let's talk about a moment that I'm assuming was going to bring on another hashtag strong sob here, because we get it sprinkled throughout. But talk to me about your thoughts on Brother's story about his father.
Okay. This is a tough one. So Brother was telling a story about, in the third grade, he had to bring in a family recipe for the class cookbook. So he asked his father for one. His father was Creole. So his father gave him a recipe for dirty rice. And it was a traditional dirty rice, and, you know, which involves some gizzards and, you know, whatever else. So when he brought in this recipe, he was made fun of because it was so weird. And then he was embarrassed about it. And then his dad died 3 weeks later. So that was the only recipe, you know, he's ever gotten from his dad.
Yeah. And I thought it was even building on that, like when we look forward, fast forward to the tasting by the judges, and, you know, he gets questioned like, have you ever made this for anybody before? He goes, no, this is literally the first time he's made it for anybody outside of his house, which I thought was also very touching.
Yeah, this was, I mean, obviously there are some very emotionally intense stories from a lot of these other chefs as well. But I mean, I feel so bad about the timing of that, you know, that you have this sort of like, it almost seems like it's something out of a movie, you know, it's Stranger Than Fiction, where you have this like, oh, that my dad gave me this recipe and he loved to cook growing up. He talks earlier on in the episode about like him and his dad used to peel potatoes and watch TV, and he has a really good associated memory with that. And you realize it's because, you know, he lost his dad at a young age, and it was truly heartbreaking to find that out. But I am so glad that, you know, he was able to really channel those feelings into what was, again, a simple dish, but really, really well acclaimed by the judges. And I'll admit, a little surprised that he wasn't in the top. I know there was only room for three chefs, but considering the amount of positivity that it got from both the edit and the judges themselves, I was a little surprised that Brother didn't end up in the top there. What do you think, Haley?
I agree. It was almost, it felt like they were broadcasting a win for him almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like once I saw Chris's dish, I was like, oh, this has great potential to win. But I was like, but Brother's story like was so great. We didn't hear a lot of Chris's story from this.
Well, let's talk about Chris's story as well, because I think that brings up a really interesting cultural stigma, I guess I would say, in the culinary world, where Chris talks about how, you know, Amish soul is his thing. And we really talk about the soul part of it in this episode, where when he was training to be a chef, you know, all he wanted to do, like a lot of chefs do, is like learn all these French techniques and cook all these French techniques because he wants to impress. And he felt like soul food was sort of beneath him, or was not as well regarded as something as delicate and complicated as French techniques. But once he got out of doing that, he, for lack of a better term, sort of found a soul. And now he, you know, his restaurant that he has, which, if his dish is any indication, I would want to check out ASAP, because it's right here in Brooklyn. But, you know, he said he lines his restaurant with pictures of his family going 7-8 generations back. And he sort of realized, you know, he talks a lot about in the course of these episodes about like my time as an adolescent chef. And I think he sort of realized while growing up, okay, I shouldn't be cooking how people want me to cook. I should be cooking how I want me to cook. And that has led to him producing some spectacular meals, one of which got him the win here.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember, it was after the initial visit to judges' table and like during their deliberation. Was that when they were all in the back in the kitchen trying his biscuits?
Yeah, eating the biscuits, and everyone loved it, except for, I don't know, this might have been like a very, you know, foreshadowing shot, but Tyler is completely nonplussed just looking at those biscuits, probably because he's like, oh, damn, like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely going home at this point, considering the insane biscuits that this guy made.
Yeah, when it was during the kind of the prep and cooking time, when he described how he was making these buttermilk brown sugar biscuits, I'm like, done. I don't care what else he's making on that plate. If I had to pick
one, he could just make that biscuit, yeah, and like, that's fine.
That's the one dish of all of them that I would want to try. And it's all the, like, the rest of it sounded great as well.
Well, Kurt, talk to me a little bit about some of these other stories from these chefs. Did any stand out for you in particular?
I was interested in how Adrian was going to kind of blend the different sides of her family. She said that her father was Black and her mother was Irish German. And I really kind of liked the story about, like, her great aunt and some of her other relatives on her dad's side, took time, but, like, there was, like, they had, like, nothing against the marriage of her parents, but it's like, if this woman is coming into her family, she's going to have to learn how to cook soul food. And so how her father's family took time with her mother to kind of teach her how to cook. And so I really was, I think I would have been most really intrigued to try these stuffed pigs trotters. Although, like, I have to get past the name.
What is it exactly?
I know pickled pig's feet or something. So I when I hear pigs trotters.
When I heard trotters, I was like, is this like a feet thing?
I think it is.
It is. Yeah, okay. It is. It's a culinary term to use to refer to the feet of pigs.
Yeah.
Coo.
Yeah, I was. I think you got the same Wikipedia entry I just did, Mike. Because I was like,
No, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm an encyclopedia, Kurt. It's all in my head.
I was really
right here.
Like, quickly trying to Google it. They said that. Unfortunately, they said the trotters weren't cooked well enough, which just makes me like, yes, yikes. Exactly. and then I liked Joseph's story about kind of cooking the squid ink pasta with his grandmother. So it was like, he did the ribbon pasta with the braised squid. It wasn't the squid ink pasta. I really liked that story. And I thought that he was potentially getting one of those, one of those edits where he vocally recognizes to the camera, acknowledges to the camera that this is going to be tough, serving 20 dishes simultaneously without the pasta potentially, getting a little bit cold or getting a little hard. And so I thought, because oftentimes when they acknowledge the issue that they're going to have to face, they end up doing really well. So I was hoping he was, not just because he's like my first draft, but I wanted to see this kind of story, excel. But then it turned out he ended up being in the bottom three. And I liked Tom's comment about how, sometimes grandma's techniques aren't really all that good, or sometimes you do need to improve on family. I was like,
Oh boy, did he get that line from that little chef Jack from the Quick Fire? Because that was a brutal line from Tom.
So I was really interested in kind of seeing how that ended up turning out.
Yeah, it's a really interesting editing pairing, I would say, because I feel like both Chicago Joe and Brother were both very in their talking heads, like, I don't know if this is going to work. And one of them did really well and one of them didn't. So it's never a clear indicator that when somebody says that, it's going to come out good or bad in front of the judges. But yeah, it seemed like I thought for a second when we were getting like all the oh no, time's kicking down, we gotta do this, and there's literally like shouting in the kitchen to the point of where the judges were turning around and looking at it, I thought that he was not gonna get everything out in time. So he was able to at least do that, even though, as Tom said, at judges table, I guess there was a temperature issue as well, quite literally, where like his pasta came out cold, which is not good.
And that was one of his concerns about the dish too.
Yeah, that's tough as well. When it comes out, and like, I will say, well, I just said that there wasn't really a difference between the way that Joe and Brother viewed their dishes. Joe did say in his confessional, like, I knew I immediately messed up. And that is never good to say on Top Chef. When you immediately know as soon as the dishes go out that you've made a huge mistake, that is not going to spell well for you in particular.
No.
All right, well, let's talk about some of these dishes. By the way, a nice cameo from Gregory.
My heart was so warm seeing him.
I didn't realize until the very end that they were actually eating in one of Gregory's restaurants. That was it. So Padma was like, thanks for having us. He's like, oh, he was the host. I didn't even realize that.
I didn't catch that until the very end either. It's like, thanks for letting us use a restaurant. Oh, wonderful, Gregory. Well done.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know why I'm so like fixated on Padma's fashion this week.
Because she looks so amazing and stunning and beautiful and perfect, and like she always does.
Well, especially like this like half up, half down hairstyle she had going on, right? Because it's like her hair is not that short.
No, they just like pin it underneath.
It was very 1920s kind of flappery That you know, I normally don't pick up on what she's wearing, but I did notice the hairstyle.
Something else I noticed during this was that every time one of the people at the table talked, it would say their name and like where they came from. And Tom Colicchio's was like Tom Colicchio, United States, originally from United States.
Oh my god, it's like the Olympics.
Yeah, I don't know why that just like made me giggle, but it did.
Oh boy. Well, then Gregory also, this is a totally tangential, but I think it speaks to this season overall. Looking at Gregory reminded me that one of the things, again, that I'm enjoying about this season is that, you know, we've had 4 episodes and we've had 8 different winners of these challenges. At this point, the only people who haven't won anything are Fatima and Tanya and I think Bruce. And Fatima and Tanya have been in the top a number of times. Bruce, not so much. But looking at Gregory's season, I mean, at this point in the season, I feel like he had won like half the challenges already. So again, this is yet another season where at this point, it feels like the field is really pretty much even. And, you know, anyone could really win at this point, including someone who might be coming in from Last Chance Kitchen. But let's get into the actual dishes themselves. We touched upon a few of them, but Haley, any highlights or lowlights for you?
A highlight was obviously Chris's lemonade fried chicken with buttermilk biscuits. It looked so amazing. What else? There wasn't a whole lot that like stood out to me as amazing. I thought they were all pretty solid dishes. But with Carrie's fava bean and chorizo salad, whenever I hear fava bean, I just immediately think of Silence of the Lambs, which is hard for me to get past. Like, well, ooh, what kind of chorizo is that, girl?
So I've got to, so I want to put some fava beans in there with a nice surprise. I won't tell you what the eyeball is. Ugh. What about you, Kurt?
You know, I still, like Sarah, I couldn't get past Chris's dish. Like I couldn't get past the biscuits. And like that really was the main thing. Like I kept, you know, he was the last person to present. And I thought it was interesting. Like he was the one that talked earlier about how he, and I think this is an interesting phrase. I know we've heard it before, but he was being very careful not to chef it up. And I think that's one of the skills on Top Chef is knowing, kind of reading between the lines of the challenge where, Are the judges trying to understand something about you from your dish, or are they trying to see what you can do through your dish? And I think this was a little bit more of the former. And so I think the whole idea of here, he knew this was not a challenge where you tried to chef it up, was, I think, key to his win. And I think it was actually key to why we saw in the top three that it was Chris, Tanya, and Joe Stash, is they didn't try to chef it up.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that, again, it comes down to an idea of sort of overcomplicating things. And instead of saying, like, let me provide a slice of where I come from, it's more so like I'm cooking on Top Chef. Therefore, I need to create this certain elevated style. I was nervous for a millisecond that when Chris brought out his food, they're going to be like, you're going to serve us fried chicken for you know, in this restaurant that Gregory provided for us just for a Top Chef challenge. This is ridiculous. But I don't know, that lemonade fried chicken made me want to like take a baseball bat and smash in somebody's windows to get them. It looked incredible. I also want to give credit to Tanya, who again ends up in the top here. I mean, I really like gumbo overall, but that fried okra on top, I'm sure that even made, you know, anti-okraite Tom love it.
There was a little bit of Tom side eye at the judge's table. He did give like even the oak. There was a small mention of okra. And when she said that she was going to be putting okra on the gumbo, I was like, OK, we're going to have to get some sort of at least a little bit of a mention from Tom about the okra. And he did not mind it.
The interesting thing as well about these criticisms overall is that I feel like, you know, there were a clear top four who only received praise from the edit in the form of Joe Stash, Chris, Tanya and brother. Everyone else got at least one nitpick. I mean, even people in the middle, you know, you had 2 where they said he might have been cooking with too much emotion. You have, you know, Fatima said, oh, yeah, this is good, but we've had a better version of this. Adrian, as you mentioned before, we got some like not raw trotters. Right. It's interesting that maybe it was the assignment, or maybe it was just I don't know the methods they were cooking, but it seemed like there were actually more misses than a challenge than a usual challenge this season, to the point where, you know, I feel like Tyler and I think the bottom three were clearly the bottom three, but I feel like outside of them, I could have seen a circumstance where any one of those other people could have ended up in the bottom. Haley, do you agree?
I absolutely agree. I was a little surprised at some of the comments they were making towards Fatima's dish, Two's dish. Who else kind of had some criticism? Like, I feel like everybody had some criticism.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was actually a little surprised to see Joseph in the bottom based on the comments. I think, like, when later there was a little bit more explanation about why he was in the bottom when he was shown to be among the bottom three, I kind of got it. But I didn't necessarily think that he was going to be there. I thought that maybe gosh, I'm looking through the list here. Well, I guess I thought that maybe Two might have been there. But like, if Adrian didn't have immunity, you know, she might have been in the bottom. But I guess it didn't really. Bruce was the only one, and maybe to some extent Tyler. Those two I thought would be in the bottom three, and I wasn't necessarily sure who the other person would be. And I was a little surprised it was Joseph, but when I heard the comments, I wasn't necessarily so surprised.
So when it came down to these three bears in the bottom, the three bottom bears, if you will, Haley, did you feel like it was going to be Tyler? Did it make sense? Or do you feel like one of the other two should have gone instead of him?
No, I definitely thought it was going to be Tyler, partially because I knew it was going to be Tyler.
Yeah, I was
going
to say.
But also, it just felt like they had the most to say about Tyler's dish.
Yeah, I'll admit I was a little surprised, again, outside of the edit, as I mentioned at the very beginning of this podcast, but considering how much there's also a running theme throughout this season that I feel like everyone has problems with lamb between, you know.
Yeah, maybe just stop cooking it for the rest of the season.
Well, that happened a couple seasons ago, right? Kurt with the, I forget the name of the dish that, was it the terrine that like Carl kept like, I know other people fail with this, but I'm not going to fail with this. Oh, look, I failed with this. I'm going home now.
Yes, that was the terrine. Yeah. Well, I thought that was more like dealing with like foie gras or something, but yeah, let's put ourselves officially on lamb watch for the rest of the season and see how that ends up going.
Yeah, because it seems like, again, Rogelio had problems with it, and I forgot who was on the other side. Oh no, Two obviously could not butcher the lamb, and now you have Bruce producing white lamb, which I know Kurt might be, you know, up your alley, but at the same time, that's a really badly cooked piece of lamb. Ugh. Like that just sounds. I mean, again, you know, as I think the thing that edged out Bruce and Joe above Tyler is that Bruce and Joe were at least had a concept coming in that they completely failed to execute on, but Tyler had no idea and no dish to speak for it at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I still, like, after the fact, I can see why, but at the moment, at the very moment, I thought for sure Bruce was going to be gone.
Haley, should we lament the bear dead at this point? Did you feel sad that all three of them were going to be on the bottom?
No.
She's fine.
I like them, but I like my lady gang more.
Lady gang.
Mm-hmm. Though you are arguably a Goldilocks, so I guess it makes sense why you wouldn't be a big fan of bears.
To be fair, I'm an artificial blonde.
Artificial Goldilocks.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I thought we would have gotten more from the bear den, if that makes sense, that they were going to be broken up this early, because we got a lot of it in the second episode. I feel like we didn't get a lot of it last episode. Fatima is sort of like their Klingeron, the baby bear. But she sort of mentioned it, but none of them did. And I'm surprised that it wasn't mentioned here again of like, oh, we're three close guys that you could sort of create a storyline out of it. But Tyler is sent to Last Chance Kitchen. We've got two episodes of Last Chance Kitchen and a surprise twist to talk about. Do either of you have any other things you want to bring up about this episode before we move into that section?
I don't think so.
I'm good.
All right, let's segue here into Last Chance Kitchen. Again, two parts, because Kurt, let's all cumulatively give you a pat on the back because your prediction was correct. They are indeed bringing somebody back into the competition that will return for the next episode. Outside of, again, being self-congratulatory, how are you feeling about the way they implemented this?
I like this. It addresses, like, we'll talk a little bit more about, like, you know, the ramifications for how this works out depending on who gets back in, but it's one of the things we had, you know, talked about was, you know, what if somebody comes back in at the final four and like a who's a vet and who's never cooked with any of these people? You know, spoiler alert, we're going to talk about who those potential three people are. It's, you know, Claudette or Kwame or Leanne. If it's Kwame or Leanne, I look forward to seeing them interact with the other chefs for several weeks. I mean, they're going to be going in. They're going to be the 11th person in a 10 person crew. Like we just had Tyler was number 11. We're going to get someone to basically swap in with him. So I like that they're doing this early. I'm not getting the impression, but I could be wrong, that they're going to kind of pull a Survivor and they're going to do like a second round of Last Chance Kitchen. So we're going to have to kind of see how that goes. But I also like the fact from a draft perspective that you're not getting somebody who comes back into the final four and wins it all like Brooke did for me last season. Your returnee is going to have to battle their way to the end.
Mm-hmm. Haley, you were very critical of this. Let's bring in four vets through Last Chance Kitchen to compete at the very start of the season. Has this, sweetened or soured the taste you've had towards this twist?
I like it slightly better because if they go in now, it's not as weird as if they went in at like the final four or final five. It's still not my favorite though. Like, I get why they'd want to have so many people there competing when they're coming back kind of, you know, pre-midway. Still not my jam though.
See, Kurt, I'm going to disagree with you. I think that they're going to keep doing Last Chance Kitchen after they bring back a person. I still think they're going to pull a Survivor and say, we'll bring back somebody at the end. But then again, this will sort of help someone's chances. It'll help an early boot like Claudette get back. You know, I feel like outside of someone like Lewis from season 11, who won like 8 LCKs in a row, it's very, very difficult for someone who gets eliminated early to come back into the competition. And like in the past two, for instance, who came back, Amar and Brooke, both went out the previous episode. And so I feel like this helps bring those early boots who might have, you know, been robbed or might have made one mistake, come back and serve as more of an underdog. But I feel like they still want to keep it humming along. I feel like it's become such a cog in the Top Chef machine at this point that removing it would make things seem a little weird for the latter half of the season.
It does seem weird that like there will be no more new videos on, you know, BravoTV.com/Top Chef/Last Chance Kitchen. So it could very well be. I'm hoping it's done. You could very well be right. Just making the official call right now that for the draft, all of our picks are now our picks. So if Adrian goes to Last Chance Kitchen 2.0 and returns, she is still Haley's draft. You just get this initial person who returns. So it'll be interesting to see because they're going to have to like, do they start it up once there's two new chefs in Last Chance Kitchen? Does that mean like the next boot is going to be a double boot? Are they going to do a quick fire and I don't know. So we'll see how it ends up playing out. But I'm hoping it's done, but I'm not entirely convinced it will be.
All right, well, let's get into these two episodes themselves where we're starting with some head and we're ending with some guts. Haley, I'm pulling a Tyler here. Haley, what did you think about these two challenges, especially as they served as sort of the LCK, I'll call it like a midpoint finale?
A, not for me, thank you. B, I thought it was funny that they were like, you know, use your head and follow your guts kind of thing, like combo there. I didn't have much faith in Tyler to be able to do this. Like it almost felt to me like he kind of gave up and he lost his focus.
Yeah, I agree.
You mean like when Claudette was, again, one of the many reasons why it's enjoyable to have Claudette in LCK is because we get some more hashtag Claudette side eye, especially in these two episodes as she gained more confidence. But she was the one that was sort of saying that Tyler was all over the place. But it's weird that you mentioned that, Haley, because I feel like on his way out or on his way over across the room, I should say, Tyler was very much like, I was the most ambitious. I feel like I shouldn't have been the one to go. So
yeah, but Tyler's the type of guy who's always going to say that he doesn't think he's the one who deserves to go. because he thinks he's I like Tyler, but he thinks he's better than everyone. And whether or not that's true, we saw it in the actual episode where he said, I'm this huge dragon. I only have this tiny little soft spot, and they hit my tiny little soft spot. And I'm leaving when I'm a better chef than a lot of the people here. And so, you know, that was also carried into Last Chance Kitchen, where he was like, well, I don't think I was the one who deserved to go. I was the most ambitious. But like we keep saying, just because you're the most ambitious doesn't mean you've made the dish that works the best.
I mean, I do give him some credit, though, for comparing himself to Smaug. He must be a true Tolkienite at heart. Kurt, where do you stand on this?
You know, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I think he was thrown a bit to see that Claudette was still there, and I think that might have shaken his confidence more than he had let on. I like the fact that we have somebody who went out in what I believe was the second episode of the show, who is, you know, still there after, like, basically has survived all these people. Like, you see Claudette in there, then you see Jen Carroll and Marcel sitting off to the side. You know, like, some weird stuff and some crazy stuff has happened. And his dish just didn't speak to me. Like, brown butter currant sauce, that's where you lost me. But I would have been interested to try all of these dishes. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. So for those of you that did not watch, the first challenge was to cook a dish using an animal head. As Tom said, you know, Tyler, you got too much in your head. So now we're going to see if you can cook using animal heads. Uh-huh. And so Tyler makes a pork cheek braised in brown butter currant sauce, a sweet potato puree, and spaghetti squash. Claudette makes
it's a taco de lengua.
It's a taco de lengua. I took like 9 years of Spanish, and I still, Claudette does a fantastic job of being able to, you know, speak these. They sound beautiful coming out of her mouth. It's a pork tongue taco with mushrooms, cabbage slaw, and salsa verde. Kwame makes a traditional Thai curry with salmon, garlic chips, and a flatbread. And Leanne goes for a braised and fried halibut cheek with sauteed vegetables, lamb, and a black bean sauce. Kwame ends up winning this one. I think it's his first, like, outright win in this LCK, and it comes down to Leanne versus Tyler. And while Leanne, very apropos for the challenge, overthinks her dish and mixes together, Tom basically calls it, you mix together a side dish with a main dish. Tyler goes home because the puree was muddy and it didn't combine well with the pork. So a little bit of a revolving door here for Tyler, but we segue immediately into the second episode where all the chefs come out. Haley, are we under the impression that they thought they were going to, like, go to a quick fire challenge or something?
Yeah, I would think so.
Which is weird, though, because we've always believed that the Last Chance Kitchen schedule up to this point was, okay, they go through the main competition, and then they do all the LCK stuff, and then the finals happen, and they bring out the LCK winner. But I guess, Kurt, in terms of, like, the filming schedule for this, then they must have just, and this completely debunks our theory of, like, oh, they wanted to bring in these vets because they only just need to come into the competition for a little bit. Arguably, they could come into the competition at this point, which they assumingly filmed before episode 5, and just stay for the rest of the season. It's a little confusing now.
Yeah, I'm not even going to try to guess what happens. I'm just like, yeah, okay, they got it done. This is shades of, you know, when did the, you know, the Big Brother battle back? When, how was that filmed? Oh my gosh, they're using the same challenges from the original timeline of the show. Like, you know what? I'm just not even going to guess. But they got it done. Was it done like multiple challenges in over 2 days, or was it spread over, like, you know, a couple weeks? But yeah, they very much were arriving thinking they were coming to a quick fire. And I liked the fact that they were like, oh my gosh, like, what's going on here? I enjoyed the little surprise for the current chefs.
And I thought it was a cool thing as well to sort of have them, because usually with LCK, it's like, okay, you guys are just going to wait and we're going to announce the winner. It's nice to sort of have them come in and get to see not only who gets announced as the winner, but to see, you know, where, to get to see where everybody is and to root on whoever you want to. It was interesting to get everyone's varied reactions too, with some people saying, we don't want Kwame and Leanne back because they're vets, and Fatima said they're going to steamroll over them. But then you have Joe Stash being like, okay, like, I don't want Claudette back because Claudette is extremely dangerous and she took out a couple of vets. So it'll be fun to see no matter who comes back at this point. The challenge itself, cook a dish using animal guts. Haley, as a big Claudette fan, how did you feel about the Kwame shade being thrown over these two episodes?
Get out of here, Kwame. Queen Claudette is here to stay. No, I like Kwame, but he was like, I don't even know what she's saying half the time. It's like, okay, well, she's still going to beat you. So what does it matter what she's saying?
Exactly.
But I think he was saying, it sounded like he was saying that though, in a positive way. Like he was saying, like, she's talking about all these things she's doing and they're like techniques or flavor combinations that he's not familiar with. And I think he was letting on that he finds that intimidating and impressive. Not that he was dogging her about it.
No, yeah.
Jen Carroll was dogging Claudette.
Yeah, she was. Like, Jen Carroll, you cooked one dish and you failed. So what are you doing?
You don't even know her.
You making tortillas again? Yes, you sitting over there on your butt again?
Yeah, fuck. Come on. Oh, yeah, and these tortillas are going to be better than anything you've ever cooked, so F you.
So we get our three dishes here. So Claudette makes a picadillo tortilla with chicken livers and cherries and a Oaxacan mother sauce. Got through that one. Phew. Kwame makes a chicken heart sofrito with crispy shallots, confit potatoes, potato tostones, and a chicken gremolata going with Puerto Rico. And Leanne goes to China with her beef liver dumpling. This is like her secret weapon. She makes hundreds of dumplings a day. So she decides to finally pull out the trump card here with garlic, shallots, ginger, and chili oil. So Kurt, looking at these three, one of them is coming back. Who do you have your money on at this point?
Mostly not based on dishes. I think Kwame is coming back. I don't feel like we've gotten a lot of positive commentary about, even though of the three dishes, I'm a sucker for dumplings, so I was most interested in trying her dishes, her dish in this last battle. But there's been just, she's, I think, been more on the bottom than on the top in terms of these Last Chance Kitchen challenges. But between Claudette and Kwame, like Claudette, the criticism was that it was slightly anchovy forward, whereas Kwame's, the complaint about his was it could have been a bigger bowl. And I just feel, food aside, that it's going to be a, unfortunately, this makes it sound like I'm saying that it's rigged. But I think that
just say it. Just say it's rigged. Do it. Tinfoil hat. Let's do it. I love conspiracy theories. Let's get into this.
I tend not to go with conspiracy theories on reality TV. I think that I tend to think it more often than not, it tends to be on the up and upside. But I think here it's in production's interest for a veteran to get back into the show. Otherwise, it's just like, why even have done that twist to begin with?
Why even do anything, really?
Yeah.
Like, so have an existential crisis watching the show. Why do I bother doing this? Why do I bother doing that? Why are there vets here? Why are there not vets here? You know, just
now you're going to make me cry.
You're welcome.
So I have a feeling I've been more impressed by Claudette of these three. And I think obviously I'm not trying the dishes. I would like her to go back, but I have a feeling it's going to be Kwame.
Also, I'll set this whole place on fire if Claudette doesn't go back. So forward to that next week.
Let's get some nice arson going in our judges roundtable. So, Haley, safe to assume who you want, who you think is coming back, right?
Well,
who do you want versus who do you think?
Yeah, see, I've never
heart
been
versus gut.
I've never been good at separating my heart from my gut in that, in that way. I always just root for the person I like the best, and it's hard for me to be like, from an objective standpoint, I think this person's gonna win, because I'm not an objective person. I am very biased in everything that I do.
But do you think it's a lock for Claudette, or do you think it's an uphill battle for Claudette?
No, I don't think it's a lock for anyone.
Okay.
I'm not a gambler. I will never place bets on things. Would I place $2 on Claudette definitely coming back? No. But do I definitely want her to come back? Yes. Has she had a great journey through Last Chance Kitchen? Absolutely. Do I think she has, more to show? Yes. And I don't want to see her journey end here. Kwame and Leanne, I'm sorry, guys. I like you. We're having a great time here. But, like, you're not a part of the season 15 story to me. Claudette is.
Do you feel like if Claudette came back into the competition that she would do well? Or do you think it could be like a revolving door scenario where she gets booted out?
I think she had her stumble. And then,
it was a team. It was like a paired team collaboration challenge where she had the stumble. Like she didn't get she didn't have much of a chance to just shine on her own.
Yeah, she learned her lesson. And, you know, she has a problem in a collaborative dish. Well, she's going to say something now. And I think that's going to carry her through. I really think she could do super well if she got back in.
So I'll just for fun, I'll say that I think Leanne's going to come back, just so now we each have sort of a horse to back here, because I do agree with what Kurt's saying. Again, not to put the Reynolds Wrap hat on right now, but I feel like, you know, I would feel like they would want to take advantage of the fact that they did bring in four ringers, four vets. They would want to see at least one of them come back to the competition outright. And I feel like, again, this is going completely off of story. I feel like there is much more story to be wrought out of. Here's Leanne. She hasn't been on the show since season one, where the show was completely different. She's pregnant, and now she's and maybe she could have some conversations with Bruce about that. But now she's, you know, coming back into the competition to see if she can, you know, work in New School Top Chef. I think there's a lot of fun that could be had with that. I'm really, and this is maybe me taking, wimping out, I'm really rooting for all of them, but I feel like Leanne might have the most story potential of all those three to really come back and show what she can do.
What if Leanne is the mother of Bruce's adopted baby? Because they have to know each other, right?
Stop.
Yeah, I called the mother is going to be giving birth soon. She hasn't been picking up. She must be super busy. And when she does pick up the phone, I thought I heard Tom Colicchio's voice in the background, which is really strange, but I thought nothing of it. I'm assuming he's everywhere just like I am.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe not.
Well, we'll see somebody come back into the competition next week. I'm assuming episode 5 will pick off right where this Last Chance Kitchen ended, with them rejoining the competition and them jumping into the Quickfire Challenge. But outside of that, folks, we're going camping in about 10 feet of snow, it looks like. Haley, you must be excited. That must speak to you.
I truly could not imagine anything worse. what Tanya was saying in the preview really spoke to me, where she said, I hate camping. I hate this. This is the worst. I hate camping in the best weather. Never mind, 10 feet of snow.
Yeah,
in May.
We'll see if any frostbite results from these chefs, because it looks like we have camping mixed with our now requisite overnight challenge, where it looks like there's going to be a snowbound cookout going on while they camp out in the middle of the wilderness. So we shall see these chefs try to brave the elements, and we will try as well amidst all the cold going on. We're hoping we're keeping you guys warm as we segue into 2018. It's been a fun year covering the show, both the back half of season 14 and now the first third of season 15 as well. I feel like the season has been a lot of fun so far, especially getting to cover it. And I'm really excited to see where it goes into the snow and beyond here on the Judges Roundtable podcast. Make sure you're subscribed if you haven't yet to our Top Chef only feed. While you're there, if you want to leave us a little rating or review, as long as it's not in the vein of the Quickfire Kid judges and they're just nasty and brutal.
Five stars only, baby.
Exactly. We are very appreciative towards it, and always, you know, keeps us more visible amongst the iTunes charts for new watchers out there. We're still early on in the season. You can also always follow all of us on social media and let us know your thoughts about what's going on. Kurt, how can people find you on social media?
I am at Kurt Clark with 2 C's, sharing pictures of all of my favorite food.
And not to be confused with Kurt Stone, correct?
Correct.
Kurt wrecked. Haley, how can people find you on social media? I know that you've been working on a couple things in the podcast atmosphere the past couple weeks.
Yeah, so I feel like a regular Mike Bloom with all the podcasts I've been on lately. So I have, obviously, the Bachelor Draft just came out this past week. If you are subscribed to the Wrap-Ups feed, that would have already come up. And if you deleted it, go re-download it, because it was a really fun episode. Amy and I were joined with Survivor 35's Rourke Luskin, and she drafted the cast with us. The cast was boring. We were fun. I also have something coming down the pipe next week or this weekend. I don't know when it's going to come out. I'll tweet it out when it does. So keep your eye out on that. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @hstrong_.
That was very cauliflower crust with your reveal there, Haley, of I have something, but you don't need to know it just
well
yet.
I don't want to spoil it, keep it fun, keep it lively.
Totally. You can find me on Twitter at a Mike Bloom type. Check out all the interviews that I'm doing. I actually, as we were recording this, I just got a notification that Tyler, my exit interview with Tyler, just got posted for Parade. I thought that was a really fun interview. Got to hear his thoughts behind everything. I'll be doing that each and every week. I'll also be speaking of reality TV wrap ups as well. I'll be joining Jessica Lease and Dan Heaton to draft slash discuss and preview the upcoming teams for this season of The Amazing Race, which is premiering this week. Make sure you check out all the other great stuff happening on reality TV wrap-ups outside of the stuff that Haley and Amy are doing on The Bachelor. I know that The Taran Show is going strong. They just released a discussion of Big Brother in the year 2017. And I hope you all have a nice end of 2017 as well. We'll talk to you guys in 2018. Do we have a hashtag that we want to use for people who made it to the end of this podcast?
Well, strong sobs, right?
Strong sobs. Yeah, I was gonna recommend bottom bears, but I looked that up, and I don't think we want to use that.
Not a great idea.
Keep it clean in 17 to finish it off.
Strong sob is good. That's also on my list.
Perfect. And let us know your guys' thoughts as well. Again, a very emotionally charged episode. Let us know the times that you hashtag strong sobbed. We'd love to hear it and just have the conversation going all week long as we move into the new year and a new episode of Top Chef. So thank you guys, as always, so much for listening. Haley, Kurt, thank you as always. Great work. And for now, you may pack your knives and go.